Welcome to All the Things with Kristen Schindler. We all have things. Doesn't matter if we're married or single, if we have no children, or if we have 10. Things in life can be overwhelming, and sometimes we just don't know how to navigate them. So each week, you're going to hear stories of hope, of inspiration, and of people navigating the same things that you and I deal with day in and day out. Their stories may sound different than ours, or they may sound just like us. Either way, each week this podcast is going to pour into your heart with hope and encouragement. We are so glad that you are here. Welcome back, friends, to another episode of All the Things with Kristen Schindler. I'm so happy to have you with us today, and I have my special guest, Kim Langling, with us today, and she is a fellow author. She's a fellow podcaster, and she just is. We've connected on different platforms, and I just love just her spirit and how she wants to share things about her life. She says she loves to share stories, tossing hope and encouragement pebbles to start a ripple of kindness and encouragement through the written word and her podcast, Let Fear Bounce. So welcome, Kim. Welcome to the fun.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to having a chat with you.
Yes. So first question out of the gate is, if you're a parent, what season of parenting are you finding yourself in?
You know, it's interesting how you say season. My daughter is 30. She is out on her own and just bought her first house all on her own. So she's doing very well for herself. So I'm not sure what season that is. Maybe fall. Maybe I'm in the fall season.
Nice. I'm sure that's very, rewarding to see your child doing that, you know, reaching those goals and milestones where they're self-sufficient. And I'm just entering that semi-season with my oldest. He's a senior. And he's out doing a welding class today at a local community college. And, you know, we're talking about all those next steps. And he'll ask me, like, Mom, what kind of house do you think that I should buy one day? And, you know, so he's kind of, and I'm like, well, you know, at this point, I think you should save your money. But it's just interesting as those seasons come, like what it looks like. But I'd like for us to really kind of dig into your platform and how you came to be at the platform that you're at. You're an author, you're a podcaster. But there were some things that happened in your life that have kind of brought you to where you are now in sharing your life and your story and your writing with others, really as a service. And that's what I kind of thought of as when we talk about the things that we all balance. I really felt like your message really was a service to yourself in terms of healing, and then that service reaching out to others who may find themselves in a similar situation or know of someone who's in a similar situation. So could you take us back a little bit and tell us a little bit about Kim and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Well, right after I graduated from high school, I entered the military. And while I was in the military, I was in military intelligence and training in Morse code, which, by the way, they don't even use anymore, which makes me feel really old. But
that season has like totally passed. So that's not even a.
Yeah, that was a while ago. And you know, I have no problem dating myself. That was 30 years ago. And went in right out of high school. And at one point, friends of mine, several friends, a couple lady friends, or we were young ladies. We were 18 and 19 years old at the time. We had been out to see a movie and we were leaving to go back to the barracks and walking across a parking lot. And there were two people that obviously had evil intent on their minds. And I was taken and put in a car and taken away overnight. And just to, you know, make it short and sweet, I was sexually assaulted by these two individuals. And I was able to escape in the early morning hours. And ran as fast as I could. And I remember it was winter, very, very cold where I was at. Very cold. And I remember as I was running how the moonlight sparkled off the snow. It was just absolutely beautiful. And for whatever reason, that's something that stuck in my head. And I'm a Christian and I have a very strong faith. I didn't always, but I do now. And looking back on that, I see that with each step I took running in that incredibly cold air that burned my eyes, burned my nose, it made it hard to breathe. I was more than likely in the midst of a panic attack. That each step was a brick in a wall that I was building to lock everything away, which I did. And I kept that brick wall firmly in place for almost 15 years. The thing with brick walls is that they certainly do keep things in, or they cer yes, they do. They don't let anything out. But they also don't let anything in. So having, and it becomes a weight. You don't realize it because in my mind, it was like, yeah, it happened. I'm done. I got through it. Not thinking about it, not talking about it. And you lock it away. You just lock it away. And the human brain is just amazing. And the human spirit is amazing. But when you build those walls or try and lock those doors, they will crash down one day, or that door will blast open one day because life happens, which could also be triggers. And that's what happened to me. It was almost 15 years later, and just life was just, I had a couple deaths in the family. A friend of mine had committed suicide. I was going through a divorce. So it was just all these big life-altering things happened, and everything crashed open. So I had a couple of deaths in my family. A friend of mine had committed suicide. I was going through a divorce. So those are a lot of life-altering things happening, and this was all these things all happened within 6 months of each other. That was a lot. That was a lot. And it brought me to my knees. It brought me to my knees. And that wall started crumbling apart, and all sorts of memories and smells and feelings and emotions just came blasting out. And that is painful when you've locked something away so tightly for so very long. It's incredibly painful and hard. And no matter what you do, you can't shove it back. So you have to deal with it. You have to deal with it and face it. I didn't want to. I did my darndest to shove everything back behind that wall. But friends of mine who were actually combat Vietnam veterans, I considered them, I have several extra fathers in them. And they approached me one day and said, "Hey kid, we don't know what's going on with you, but we recognize the signs. And if you don't go and talk to somebody, we will drag you kicking and screaming." And I said, "I don't need your help. I don't need anybody's help. I don't need to talk to anybody. I'm fine." But I wasn't sleeping, wasn't eating, had lost a tremendous amount of weight. I've never been overweight my entire life, so I kind of became a bit skeletal, is what they told me. But when you're so far in that, you just don't pay attention to your own self. So they eventually did. They did drag me kicking and screaming to go talk to somebody at the VA. And all these years fast forward, I'm so thankful for them that they recognized the signs of post-traumatic stress because they had lived with it themselves from their time in Vietnam. And having that, having, went to talk to someone, and I continued to do so for a long time. I've learned through talking and getting my mind in the right frame to look at the events of that time in the right way, and that I do have self-worth. I am not a loser. I did not invite evil upon me, nor did I ask for it. I'm also one that would never take the victim stance ever. So I was able to look at it in a healthy way, disseminate it, and put it in the boxes that they needed to be put in the proper, healthy way. And since I've been able to do that, I've began going to church years ago because I really didn't like God at all. But then I kept feeling this nudge in my heart that I needed something else to bring peace. And so I began going to church and kept going, making myself go, because I'd go in angry and leave angry every Sunday for months. And then there was another shift in my heart and in my soul, I like to say, because that's what it felt like, that I started feeling, having this feeling. It's like, Kim, you have to start sharing your story, because you are not the only one that was sitting in that dark, dark hole, feeling so alone, and that no one would understand you, no one would get it. And I know that sharing my story, I knew it would help people, but it took me a while to want to share it, because it was, again, opening up everything and all that hurt and angst and depression and anxiety and sleepless nights and nightmares that all came back again. And but I made myself do it. I pushed myself through that. I also prayed a lot about it too, and had a lot of good people around me supporting me. And the first time I shared that in public, in a face-to-face group, it was for a women's group. There's probably about, 45 ladies. And I was asked to specifically share that time frame. And I shared it. And it was hard. I was really, really nervous. I was super nervous. But afterwards, three ladies, all different generations, came up to me in tears, hugged me, and said the same thing happened to me. Three ladies out of this small group of 40 to 45. And from that moment on, I said, you know what? Doesn't matter how much it hurts me or how nervous I get. Those ladies, all different ages, from early 30s to mid 50s, and the oldest one was 88 years old. And the 88-year-old woman, absolutely beautiful woman, beautiful heart, she was sobbing so hard because she said she had never told anyone that.
Wow.
88 years old. And I'm getting tears in my eyes right now remembering that, because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I thought 12 years was a long time for me to hold all that in. And she's 88. And that had happened to her decades ago. And that's when I realized, you know what, Kim? The story might be yours, but the way you need to share it is it's not about you. You have got to get that out there and show people, women, young girls, whatever the case may be, that they're not alone, and that they can. There is joy and peace on the other side of that brick wall. There is, but you've got to let it come down. You've got to let it come down, and it's going to hurt like hell, but you got to let it come down. So for the past 12, 13 years, I've been sharing my story, And the feedback, the people I've met from women of all ages, from all over the world, really, they all agree and they all say, keep sharing that. Keep sharing that because there's so many out there. And that's the heartbreaking thing, is there's so many out there that have went through similar circumstances. But that's what inspired me to write. I started writing my story, not only speaking it, but writing my story out and writing other stories about living with post-traumatic stress and how that affects you on a day-to-day basis. And where you're at when triggers come and how to deal with triggers and things like that.
I have a question for you. So, one of the things that when you become a parent, a lot of the things that have happened to you in your life, positive and negative, they manifest differently in the way that you parent your children. And I find it fascinating. I was talking to someone the other day who is an NLP coach, and it talks about timeline therapy, where you really go back and you're looking at all the different major events that happen in your life, and then the trajectory of decisions that kind of splinter off of that event. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure novel, right? You could do it one way or you could do it another way. How did raising your daughter, how did this story and this event that happened to you affect the decisions in terms of parenting for her, and especially because she was a girl?
I was very protective, needless to say. I was very protective. And at that time frame, I hadn't acknowledged any of it. So I was at that time always hyper aware of my surroundings, always. And as she was growing, I always just taught her in a mommy kind of way. These are the don't, you don't do this on your own, or you don't go over here by yourself. And as she got a little older, we'd go into parking lots and I'd be like, okay, always hold mommy's hand and never run ahead of me. And when she started driving, I would say, okay, when you're parking in a parking lot, and I was always very focused on that because I was grabbed in a parking lot. And I'm always like, don't park beside this type of vehicle and always park under a light and as close to the door as you can, and I did all of that. And I started taking self-defense lessons from a friend, one of my veteran friends. He's a triple black belt. And they weren't the typical self-defense for women. This self-defense is self-defense to harm. And so the person is down and they do not get back up, so they can't chase you. It's not, stop them long enough so you can run. It's stop them so you don't have to run. So it's pretty intense. And I had my daughter do it with me. And she just took to it like a little fish to water. She absolutely loved it. We made it fun, of course, but she's 30 now and she thanks me for that. Not that she's never been in a situation like I was, thank God. But she said that she can look back now and realize why I was always so insistent on if you're by yourself, you do this. And if you're by yourself, you do that. I never did it in a way to frighten her because I did ask her that one time. I said, did I ever seem overly protective or too smothering or scary? And she said, no, I understood that you were trying to protect me. And I was always, she would jokingly say to the young men, like when she started dating, when I allowed her to start dating, they'd have to come and meet me first, no matter what. And they would always say, what's your mom like and what's your dad like? Well, we were divorced at that time, and my daughter would always laugh and say, you'll get a chance to meet my dad, but he's not the one you need to be afraid of. It's my mom. So that was always, yeah. That was always kind of her thing, and she was right. And they always said, "You're right. I'm more afraid of your mom than I am of your dad." But She never knew that story. I never shared that story with her until she was about 15 or 16. And I had been asked to share my story in a collaborative book project. And that was the first time I had ever written it to be actually published and out into the world. And that was another stepping stone for me. And she didn't know my story, and I didn't share everything in the book either, but more than I typically would. And she didn't know anything about the full story until I did that book. And then our relationship changed, became much closer. Not that we've always been very, very close. But she also looked at me from the eyes of a young adult. And she was, I think, 15 or 16 at the time. And I remember her one day saying, we were talking about it, and just talking about different scenarios. And I was always very, very open and honest. And I remember her looking at me this one time, and the look in her eyes was like hurt for me, and she said, Mom, you were only 2 years older than I am now when all that happened. And I said, I know, sweetie, you're right. And then she just kind of looked at me and grinned and said, I'm not going to go into the military. I'm going to college. I said, okay, sweetie, but all the same rules apply.
Right.
But so it shifted. Things for her shifted. And she grew up very quickly in those few moments of that talk that we had. And had a different respect for me as her mom and not just this overprotective mama bear because she understood it. But
Well, it made sense to
right.
her. Yeah, it made sense to her.
But it was
The
something,
puzzle pieces had made sense.
yes, it all fell together, for her. But I didn't want to share something like that with her until I knew that she would actually understand it and not be afraid of it, if that makes sense.
When you talk about like starting your writing and you felt that it was very cathartic, where did the idea of your podcast come from, Let Fear Bounce? Was that something that you had thought about for a long time, or was it something, where did that manifest from?
Yeah, and that's interesting. I've actually said those words for years. Actually, I would always say, I'm just letting it bounce. I am letting it bounce. I'd have a bad day or someone was really annoying me at work or something. I'm like, you know what? I'm letting that negativity bounce. Not taking those poison darts today. And I've said that for years, just, talking to myself. And in March of last year, the insane year that everybody had, fear was pretty much floating in the air on a daily basis. Didn't matter if you were on your computer, on the radio, listening to the radio, watching television, out getting groceries. Fear was running rampant. And I'm not one that lets fear hold me back from anything. I was not going to hide in my house and burrow away, afraid to be human anymore. And now am I or had I completely, ignored everything that was going on? No, because it's all very real. But I choose not to live in fear because that just sucks your energy. And there's no need to for it. There's a lot of things that you could be doing that are positive instead of letting fear drag you down. So I literally woke up, when was it? November, beginning of no, no, mid-November of last year. So this had been floating around in my head for several months. I literally woke up one morning, literally sat on the side of my bed and said, I think I'm going to start a podcast. And that's how things come to me. I think of
Yeah.
them and then I do them. So I literally just started this in November, but I had no, it only took me 2 seconds to think of a name for it. And I said, well, I'm going to just start this podcast, have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to teach myself and I'm going to call it Let Fear Bounce. And the more I thought about it, the more it settled. I thought, you know what, that's a perfect name for a podcast because people will read it and they're going to resonate with it in some way. They're going to resonate with it. Or they're going to think, wow, maybe I should let fear bounce too. Or what's she actually talking about there? And it'll get them thinking that no one has to live in fear. And it takes so much from your life. It takes so much joy and peace from your life. And you know, I ended up with a I guess they call it a milder case of COVID. So I was through the whole holiday season, just me and my dog quarantined in my house. And not once was I fearful. I felt awful, felt like crap for quite a while, actually. But I wasn't fearful. And I'm thinking, okay, so yeah, I've got this and we're just going to plow through it. And what else can I do that's positive? So I started writing more. That's me though. That's how I'm built, I guess, you know, how my brain works. Everybody's doesn't. And I am not downplaying anyone's fears whatsoever because I'm just talking about me and my choices and my mindset. And my mindset is I can't let fear rule any area of my life. And sometimes, you know, I sit there, I'm thinking, you know, I've seen in my lifetime, I've seen those little glimpses of hell. And why would I want to purposely put myself there? So that's actually that's how I look at fear. And it's, you know, I'm not going to purposely put myself in the dark. I've been there. I don't like it there. You know, and I had to crawl my way out. And I'm so glad I did, that I was able to, you know, myself and with support of others and my faith coming, you know, into my life more and more. So that's how that came about. Let fear bounce. Just got to let the poison darts bounce off. Strap your, you know, put your armor on every morning when you wake up. Put it on every morning when you wake up. And doesn't matter where you're at, negativity is going to come flying at you from all directions. But it's also a part of my, how I deal with my PTSD as well. I'm very visual, so I always have to visualize something. And post-traumatic stress, it never goes away. You learn how to deal with it and manage it in a healthy manner, because that trauma that, you know, you ended up with PTSD because of, that's part of who you are. And so it becomes a part of you and you become a part of it. That's how I see it. And so it also enables me, the more I learn and the more I'm able to better settle my mindset on those, I call them dark days, because everybody has them. Doesn't matter if you have PTSD or not, everybody has those dark days. And I find that it helps me better able to deal with all that visual of I got my armor on every day. And I say the D-man. That's what I call the devil. Say it, the D-man. I'm like, you know what? I'm not inviting the D-man in my back door today. I've got my armor on and he's not coming in, going to be shooting any poison darts at me. So, you know, when I know that my mindset's not great for the day, I'll be like, oh, put the armor on. We're letting it bounce today. But and I have, that's me. I have to say stuff out loud like that. I have to claim it, you know? I've got to say it with authority and claim it, and that works for me. So that's
I
the
love, yeah, that's powerful. And you know, when you were talking about, I'm a very visual person too, and it just, you know, when you say that PTSD, it doesn't go away, but it kind of reminds me of like a quilt, like the fabric of our life, like that event, it made that part of your season like worn, you know, like how like in a quilt or a fabric. Like it can be very thin in a certain area, and then that area is more susceptible as we continue going through life, right? That area, it's not a bruise, because a bruise, you know, eventually heals, but it's a thinning of that would then be more vulnerable when triggered. But I think when you were talking, you know, your writing and your podcast, and you know, it made me envision like a quilt that had been like really threadbare in a certain section, but then had a beautiful patch that was put over it. And like you reaching out to others and doing a speaking engagement is like one little section of that patch. And so it doesn't change the fact that that event happened. And when you look at the quilt of your life, you know it's still there, but it has other things that have kind of made that thinning stronger.
And it's still, I love that visual of the quilt. I really do, because quilts are beautiful. And all those pieces and parts and all of the love that are put into making them. You know, there's any quilt maker I've ever known, there's a story behind the quilts that they make. And in every piece that they put together, there's a story behind it. And there's always a story with a quilt. I was honored with receiving a quilt of valor, and those are given to veterans. And when they wrap that quilt around your shoulders, thanking you for your service, that's what I pictured when you were talking about that. Because there are times, I love that quilt picture. I really like that visual. That's a whole story right there. You got my author brain going.
There you go.
You got my writer's brain going.
There's your nugget for you. That's what there you go. I'm a visual person, and that's how my brain works too. And oftentimes I'll say something or whatever, and I have a friend, and she'll say, "Who talks like that?" And I'm like, "That would be me. That's me. I don't know." And so it's just the way that my brain works. But I think you and I are very similar in how our podcast started, because I really had never even listened to just a handful of podcasts. I wasn't like, and my best friend was like, "Oh, you should listen to this person, this," and I had hashtag all the things I was doing. I didn't have time for a podcast. So I think that that's amazing, because then other people have been researching for years. I have a friend who has a podcast that I talked to the other day. This has been something that she's been wanting to do for 5 years, but and then they take classes, they're like researching the right kind of microphone. I'm like using like $5.99 earbuds on my
You
desk,
betcha.
whatever. So
I
I just
love
think,
it.
yeah, but I think that getting the message out there is the most important thing. I mean, there are things that I'd like to do with my podcast as this grows. Like, I'd like to have a video component, because I think I want people to be able to see who they're hearing. I want them to be able to connect with that person and see the way that their facial expressions are and things like that. But I don't want to have to wait to have all that in place to not hear a story as powerful as yours, because you're so right. There are people that need to hear this. And one of the things about events in our lives that we pack away, I always like to compare it to like baggage. That's the like the least favorite part of coming home from a trip for me, is having to like unpack all the bags. And we have three children, and when they were littler, it was like I was doing all of the unpacking, and it was just like miserable. But when an event happens that is traumatic and we pack it away, it's kind of like the visual I use is if I was flying at the airport and I just knew that I had some piece of luggage that I really just didn't want to have to deal with, and I just left it at the airport, and it's going to keep circling and circling and circling. And eventually, if the airlines do their work, that luggage will show up back at my house. Somehow, some way, I'm going to get contacted about that luggage. And it's not never it's not ever at a convenient time when that luggage circles back, and that trigger that happens or whatever. And then you are forced to confront that baggage.
You
Kind of like
are
what you talked
right.
about with like the loss of your friend, with those events are hard enough, let alone then having to unpack all of this, hurt and, but that's also that growth that we talk about where are you going and how are you growing, learning that we have to unpack those things. Just like a person that comes home from a trip, if you don't
Sure.
unpack that baggage, it's going to be stinky and
Marsh.
nasty and
Yep.
anything that you are worried about, like the day you return from the beach, it's going to be like a really bad 2 months from there,
Yeah.
So I think that that's great. So as we wrap up today, if you could give my audience some takeaways of things that you have found that have really helped you as you navigate dealing with this PTSD, and what would you say are the biggest takeaways of things that help you to balance these things on a daily basis?
Yeah, one thing I was asked the other day was looking back on your life, and they didn't really know a whole lot about me. We were just chatting, and they said, "Well, what would you turn around and say to your 18-year-old self?" And that stopped me because they didn't know my story. And I said, "You know, I'm going to have to get back to you on that." And they were surprised by that answer. And I had to think about it, looking back. What would I say to my 18-year-old self? And the only thing I could think of was, you're going to be so loved and so supported just when you need it. But be strong in the storm because there is strength even in the midst of a storm. And I said that out loud in my house to my 18-year-old self and broke down in tears and thought, you know, if I had had someone at that time to say something to me closer to that time frame, instead of lingering in it for so many years, it would have been tremendously helpful. So if anyone listening, no matter what your circumstance, if you're in a dark spot, there is strength in the storm. And people you don't even know care about you and pray for you. And eventually, with the right support and the right care for yourself, you will be okay. You will be okay. There is light out there. There is light outside the darkness, and there is strength in the storm.
Thank you so much for joining us today on this episode with my friend Kim. And I'm so thankful for her to share her story of dealing with sexual assault and dealing with the PTSD from that assault, and just showing how she was able to really pour into herself and really use that gift of writing that she has to be able to heal those parts. Those vulnerable parts and get the information down out of her head and out of her heart, because by serving herself, she's then able to serve others. And that's what life is all about. When we realize what our gifts and talents are, we're able to give them away. And Kim's story is unfortunately not isolated. There are so many people who struggle with being sexually assaulted who never speak of it, and they hold that so tightly, and they guard themselves. They build those walls so strong. And I just ask you today that if you're someone who knows of someone with a history of sexual assault, that you perhaps pass this podcast on to them today. And if you yourself are someone who has suffered an assault of this nature, I just pray that you're able to give yourself the grace to start taking those bricks down one by one and find what your unique gifts and talents are so that you can serve not only yourself, but you can serve others. If you've liked what you've heard today, and if you've felt encouraged and inspired, I ask you to please visit my Patreon account, All the Things, and become a member. That way we can give more quality content to our followers. You can also go to kristinleeschindler.com and you can learn more about what I'm doing in Sri Lanka to help another woman to offer hope to her and her family. Thanks for being with us today. And just remember that your story, your message, and your gifts matter. So start sharing them. Sprinkle them around like Parmesan cheese.